First Baptist Church of Redmond, August 28, 2022, John Chapter 10, The Good Shepherd, Part 2.
Please rise and join me in reading John 10:11. I am the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. You may be seated.
We'll be continuing our presentation of the Good Shepherd from John 10, verses 11 through 21. I was able to find a picture of the illustration I was talking about. In China, the wealthy in China use body doubles to prevent them getting in trouble. In China, the extremely wealthy can avoid prison terms by hiring body doubles. Incredibly, this is true. Slate.com originally broke the story of how the super rich in China get away with pretty much everything, including murder. According to Slate, a wealthy 20-year-old named Hu was drag racing his friends when he struck and killed a pedestrian. Although Hu received a 3-year prison sentence, allegations that the man appearing in court and serving the 3-year sentence, pictured here in the orange vest, wasn't Hu at all, but a hired body double. In another case, the owner of a demolition company that illegally demolished a home hired a destitute man and promised him $31 for each day the body double spent in jail. In China, the practice is so common, there is even a term for it, substitute criminal. This may seem scandalous, but 2,000 years ago, someone became a substitute and took the punishment we deserve. He took the penalty of all our sin in his own body on the cross. Justice is not met by the wealthy getting off scot-free. However, the death of Christ was the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God. I quoted 1 Peter 3:18. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. I repeated today the picture I used last week. I saw this picture every day when I lived at home because it had a featured position in my house. My parents and my mother especially liked the imagery of Jesus as the good shepherd. Jesus continues, I am the good shepherd. Really, the shepherd, the good one. The adjective is stressed. This adjective, meaning the word is beautiful. I am the beautiful shepherd, the excellent shepherd, the shepherd with beyond compare. Here it indicates excellent. The shepherd answers to the ideal, both in his character and in his work. In the sense that is meant, it cannot apply to ordinary sheep herders, no matter how good he or she might be. Such a shepherd may indeed risk his life in the defense of the sheep, but 2 Samuel is the case in 1 Samuel 17, 34 through 36. But he does not really lay down his life. He does not yield his life as a voluntary sacrifice. He who has a hired hand and not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leave the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters the flock. They are hired hands. They have no concern, no love for the sheep. That is typical of the hireling. Some hired men have the may have the shepherd's heart and care a little bit about the sheep, but these hirelings have no concern, no love for the sheep. They are merely working for wages. They had just given a very telling example of their utter lack of concern for the true sheep. It's a figure of speech. I am the good shepherd. And Jesus is going to make a good comparison of himself, the perfect sheep, the perfect shepherd, the beautiful shepherd, the excellent shepherd, the one-of-a-kind shepherd, and contrasted with everybody who wants to be controlling, a.k.a. the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Sanhedrin. They were the kind of people who would devour widows' houses. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters the flock. He immediately forgets about the sheep. Says he to himself, what do I care about the sheep as long as they're not mine anyway? So in the spirit of cold selfishness, he flees. Had the Pharisees, these religious leaders of the people, shown the least interest in the man who was lame at Bethzapha and Christ healed him? Had they manifested even a speck of pity for the woman taken in adultery in chapter 8, verse 3 and 6? And we see how they treated the man who Jesus had cured of his angelical blindness in chapter 9, verse 34. I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. Jesus, and he alone, is the good shepherd for. In distinction from the Pharisees viewed as strangers in verse 5, he knows his sheep, and he says, I know. He knows the name and the nature of each one of the sheep, and the sheep have experiential knowledge of the shepherd. In the distinction from the Pharisees viewed as thieves and robbers, he owns the sheep. Jesus, and he alone is known as the good shepherd for, in distinction from the Pharisees viewed as hirelings. Jesus is comparing himself to everyone else, especially the Jewish leadership, because they did not care about the people. They cared only for the chief seats and the important places at banquets and weddings and to get respect openly, but they did not care about the people. In contrast, he loves his sheep even to the point of offering himself as a sacrifice in their behalf in their stead. He says, I lay down my life for the sheep. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. Matthew 11:27. All things have been delivered unto me by my Father, and no one knows the Son except the Father, nor does anyone know the Father except the Son and the one whom the Son wills to reveal him. What Jesus states in these verses cannot mean that the fellowship which is found on earth between good shepherd and the sheep is just as close as that which is found in heaven between the Father and the Son, but that the former is patterned after is a reflection of the latter. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice, and they will become one flock with one shepherd. Not all the sheep belong to the fold of Israel. the good shepherd has other sheep, namely us. I don't know many Jewish believers, but I know a couple. But the other sheep he is talking about is us, ourselves, people across the world who respond to the gospel's call. He has them even now because they have been given to him by the Father in the decree of choice from eternity. That is the reason why even before they are gathered out, they can be called his sheep. For this reason, the Father loves me because I lay down my life so that I may take it back. Christ's action differs in two respects from that of a shepherd who risks his life in behalf of the flock. One, it is a voluntary sacrifice. When the proper moment arrives, will in the next Passover, Jesus will not try to cling to life like the shepherd who, in his struggle with the wolf, tries to save himself. It actually saves the sheep. There is a third difference. No man has taken it away from me because I laid down it on my own. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it back. This is a commandment I received from the Father. Jesus lays down his life in order to take it again. Destroy this temple in 3 days, and in 3 days I will raise it up. John 2:19. No ordinary shepherd is able to do that. Christ's death and also his birth is purposeful. Had he not given his life, had he resisted death, he would not have been able to take it again. So he gives in order to take back. He does both in obedience to God's wish and the interest of his people. As you can imagine, dissension occurred again among the Jews because of these words. It was time to decide. It is not difficult to understand that to the mind of the natural man, the words of Jesus appeared to be foolishness. Why would a man lay down his life in order to take it back again? True, some people desire to commit suicide, but surely not with the intention of coming back to life once more, even if they could. Many of them were saying, "He has a demon and is insane. Why do you listen to him?" Many perhaps, and the majority of people were reasoning in this matter. They said, "He has a demon and raves." They did not mean to identify insanity with demon possession, but intended to convey the idea that Jesus, being definitely under the control of an evil spirit, was uttering sheer nonsense. Why should anyone continue to listen to him? Others were saying, "These are not the words of one who is demon-possessed. A demon cannot open the eyes of those who are blind. Can it?" Perhaps they could not understand everything, everything about Jesus, everything about the Father, but of one thing they were certain. These are not the words and remarks of a demon-possessed person. Besides, they have not forgotten the great miracle which Jesus has performed so very recently of healing the layman. As they see it, this miracle has value in itself for us. Jesus as the Good Shepherd. It is so conspicuous that we must remind ourselves again and again that these things mean something. These things have significance beyond the words of Jesus. At other times, as in 10:6-11 and 14-18, the actual realities, Jesus caring for his own, laying down his life for them, humble believers trusting in him and obeying him, the Pharisees hating Jesus and his followers are much more clearly evident. I want to talk about a man named Raoul Wallenberg. You might have heard of him. He's a notable name in history, but he was Swedish. And many Americans have not heard about him. That's a memorial to his death, and it's written in many languages. Raoul Wallenberg missing, the hero of the Holocaust. Let me tell you his story. The Russians could not believe that someone would sacrifice themselves. And when they swept over Eastern Europe in their battle to stop the Russian, stop the German army in World War II, Raoul Wallenberg presented himself. He was a Swedish diplomat, and he told them, "Oh, I've come to put my own life on the line. I'm going to try to falsify papers to let as many Jews escape the Holocaust as possible." They were convinced, the Russians were convinced, that he must be a spy. The biography of a book written by Wallenberg says this: "When I held his original Lubyanka prison card in my hand a few years ago, I could see with my own eyes how the slot designating his crime in the 13 was left blank. I also noted that no fingerprints were taken. The Russians were convinced that nobody on earth would take the chance to sacrifice themselves for a large group of unpopular people. So they took him captive, took him prisoner, and put him in the famous Lubyanka prison. He died in April of 1947. He had committed no crime. He had freed many Jews. He was named as a righteous among the generations in Israel, and they couldn't believe that he didn't have an ulterior motive. They couldn't believe that someone would take a chance and lay down his life for people that he didn't know. That's what Jesus did for us. He knew us, though. He knew everything about us. And he knew mostly that he needed to be a sacrifice and die for us. Why? Because we needed him to. We needed Jesus uniquely able to pay for the sins of mankind, humanity, and lay down his life for us. He alone could do that. He alone, as the God-man, could die, suffer real death, and pick up his life 3 days later. He achieved our justification. He achieved our peace with God. So peace with God is available if you trust Jesus' sacrifice alone. Jesus' death for us and his power to resurrect himself and ascend to the Father not many days later is the reason we have redemption.